listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm. We go now to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline as we kick off hour number two for a new segment we're going to have every Tuesday as we're joined by Pro Football Focus's John Costco. John, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me back, guys.
All right, good to be with you. Let's start with last week's game. What stood out to you guys at PFF from the Browns in terms of their efforts?
Well, I mean, it's been widely talked about, but Josh McCown had the best performance on offense. He threw the ball well, intermediate zone, deep, short, made right decisions, and had the offense clicking. But the pressure did eventually get to him, got hit several times, and his passer rating dropped from 90.5 to 59.2 when he was under pressure. Malcolm Johnson had a really, really good game in run blocking, even though he only logged 10 snaps, but he opened up a couple of holes for Crow. Gary Barnage even had a good game, pass catching and blocking, and then obviously he had the rookie Corey Coleman looking like a first-round draft pick, which was very nice. That's exactly what we envisioned him to be when we were grading him and evaluating him coming out of college. So those are the top offensive performers. And Joe Thomas, despite giving up a couple of hurries and a hit, played well in run blocking. Obviously, Joe Hayden looking like his former self. He now leads the league in total pass disruptions. He has two interceptions and three pass defenses. Yep. Nobody else touches him there. He also grades as our number two overall cornerback through 2 weeks behind Josh Norman. Nate Orchard, he's taken his demotion to backup really well and playing at a high level. He has four pressures, three hits on just 14 pass rush snaps. Tops all the edge defenders in pass rushing productivity. Danny Shelton, again, 2 weeks
continues,
in a row has just been dominant in the run game. He grades as our sixth best nose tackle in run defense through the first 2 weeks, and he is second behind the Ndamukong Suh in run stop percentage and run stop total run stop. So
and he was a guy last year who was at the very bottom of your rankings for his position.
Exactly. He struggled really to get adjusted to the NFL size and speed and scheme. But then, you know, like I said last week, I pegged him as a breakout player for the Browns this year because he did show in the second half of the season that he had improved quite a bit. And he's shown so far for the first 2 weeks that he's a top 10 nose tackle in the NFL.
What about Tyrone Holmes, guy who came out of Jacksonville that I know a lot of people down there were excited about? It was kind of a surprise cut. The Browns bring him in, 10 snaps. He gets three hurries in that one. What did you guys see from him at Pro Football Focus?
He was explosive and quick off the ball, and he disrupted in, you know, very limited snaps that he had. He's also a guy that we graded really highly in college and in preseason. So when Jacksonville actually cut him, a lot of us at PFF were pretty shocked by that. And he was the first guy that I thought the Browns should target in waiver wire pickups was him. And, you know, they got lucky because they had, probably at the top of the waiver wire pickup, and it was reported 10 some teams were trying to get him. So if they can bring it, he's going to play a lot more with NASA being hurt. So if he can continue that type of success that he had in the preseason and in this game, he would be a dominant pass rusher.
John, looking up on the schedule on who's next for the Cleveland Browns, who were some of the playmakers for the Miami Dolphins, both offensively and defensively, that have graded best through 2 weeks with you guys there at Pro Football Focus?
So Ryan Tannehill had struggled in his first game against the Seahawks, but he played really well in the second half of that game. Last week against the Patriots, he was, you know, pretty much firing on all cylinders, and, you know, I haven't fully taken a look at the tape on, you know, if the Patriots changed up what they were doing against him, you know, from first half to second half, if they started getting, getting lax in their blitzes and stuff. But he hasn't thrown a single turnover-worthy throw that we call. So his two interceptions that he's had is, you know, the last-second heave and trying to make, against the Patriots last week, and he also was hit as he was throwing on the other pass. He didn't have a bad fumble against Seattle in crunch time, so he does show a tendency to crumble under the pressure when it's down to the last seconds of the game. Devontae Parker, their second-year wide receiver, played really well last week. He had a ridiculous one-handed grab in the second half of that game. And then you have Jarvis Landry, who's probably, you know, top two slot wide receivers in the NFL. He'll give Tremont Williams some trouble in the slot. I really think that the move of putting Taylor outside and Tremont Williams in the slot has hurt Tremont Williams. He's a guy that's played on the outside his entire career, and it's something that he knows is playing on the outside. So he's trying to still adjust to the slot. He seems to be like he's in position, but he's not.
As we said, he's always right there, but he's just not being able to make the plays so far.
Exactly. You know, he gave up the touchdown week one to Jordan Matthews, and that was out of the slot. You know, that's something if he would have been on the edge, on the outside there, he could have used the sideline more to his advantage. And when you're in the slot, he doesn't have that advantage. Offensive line, they have a pretty solid across the board, but they do have an untested center in Anthony Steen. And then on the defensive side, Ndamukong Suh is a beast this year. He's a beast last year, and he's been one his entire career. He gets a lot of flack for that defense of, you know, struggling last year, but he had a career year in our grades. He, you know, on our 0 to 100 grading, he was above 90 for the first time in his career. He got off to the quarterback's most pressures in his career, even though it didn't result in double digit sacks. And then you have obviously Mario Williams and Cameron Wake on the edge.
Sure.
Both are, you know, shown to be, you know, elite pass rushers. Though they're at the tail end of their careers, they still can get after the quarterback. Kiko Alonso is having the best, you know, start to his career. I think he was pretty much out of position in that Eagles scheme last year. But the weak spots on that defense are their cornerbacks, and Xavien Howard, who is a rookie out of Baylor, and Byron Maxwell.
Yeah, you got to try to attack those guys. Similar to week one, when the weakness was in the secondary for the Philadelphia Eagles, the Browns are going to have to exploit that, but that's going to be tough with Cody Kessler. Talking with John Costco from Pro Football Focus, and John, one of your colleagues there, Sam Monson, wrote an Everything You Need to Know About Cody Kessler. We know in 2014 he was very highly graded by Pro Football Focus. Last year kind of declined a little bit, but what can Browns fans hope to see? What's best-case scenario, Cody Kessler? What's worst-case scenario, Cody Kessler?
Best case scenario is not having to throw the ball very much, but I'd say, you know, keeping his attempts under 25 number of dropbacks and being able to run on the Miami defense. He's extremely accurate under, you know, in the short and intermediate passing game, and so if Hugh Jackson dials a game plan of him doing a lot of quick passing, which is shocking so far this year that McCown and Griffin have had in the top 10 in longest time to throw, where, you know, the past 2 years, Andy Dalton was the quickest in the NFL. So if he can get back to, you know, putting a game plan together for the quick passing game, that would be ideal. If you see Miami stacking the box and stopping the run, which I'd expect them to do, at least attempt to do, that's where the bad case scenario would come into play, and he's now throwing it for, you know, trying to swing it around 40 times in a game.
Cam Irving has not been graded well over the first 2 weeks by you guys, and he will be out this week. Do you think this is going to be a situation where that could help this line with Greco sliding over to center and for Alvin Bailey coming in at guard?
It's tough to say. Greco looks good, you know, in the limited time that he has played center. I know when Alex Mack went down to injury against Pittsburgh a couple years ago, he looked fine as a center there, and he looks fine this week. So if he can continue that, Alvin Bailey has been he was with Seattle last year, and he was kind of roughed up. He's a guy that can play well as a substitution, but he hasn't shown well as a starter in his career. So I think Cam Irving, though, he's young and he's still trying to learn a position, and they do struggle at that position when he's there. So it would probably be an upgrade with Greco there. It might just be flipping the positions where you've got now a strong, you're good at center, but you're weak at right guard. And then with Austin Pastore, who's still, he did improve as a pass protector this past week. He struggled in the run game. So you would have on one side of the line, you know, offensive line, you might have, some troubles.
Have any things really stood out to you that surprised you after 2 weeks when looking at this Cleveland Browns team? Any stats that have really kind of you go through? Because I know you guys have all the great signature stats there. Anything that surprised you about this Browns team?
Yeah, I think Nate Orchard has kind of has surprised me. You know, he hasn't rushed the passer very often because he hasn't been in there. But when he has, he's grading as one of the, on a per-snap basis, one of the best pass rushing productivity at 21.4. So he's getting after the quarterback. And then you look on the also on the defensive line, Jamie Neeter, he hasn't done much in terms of the run game or the pass rushing. He hasn't generated any pressure. He's not getting any tackles, which for a big guy like him, I'd think that, you know, he'd be able to clog those running lanes and be able to do that. But I'm sticking with the defense too, run stop percentage wise. The edge guys are playing extremely well. Nassib, Schobert, and Ochard are all ranking in the top 11 in run stop percentage. And then on the offensive side, it shocks me that the offensive line has been as bad as it has been. I mean, pass protecting, they rank sixth worst in the NFL in the number of pressures that they're giving up. They've given up 4 sacks, 7 hits, and 13 hurries. And it looks bad, and it is bad. There are 5 teams that are worse. I know Browns fans will look at the game and go, this is the worst offensive line in football. But, you know, when we compare it on a league-wide basis, it's not. It's just still.
And
not
last
good.
Year's was disappointing as well.
It was, but it wasn't as bad as it actually seemed. A lot of the pressures and the hurries that they were giving up, a lot of the sacks, were on the quarterbacks drifting in the pocket. Johnny Manziel did a lot of improvising, and so he was drifting directly into what was from a clean pocket into giving himself the rest. Josh McCown has a tendency to do that as well. But then you have the tight ends did not pass block very well last year, and the running backs didn't help them in pass protection either. So it looked worse last year than it really was. The offensive line held up pretty good.
And the other one that stood out to me, John, and we'll talk about Isaiah Crowell. We saw the burst on that long run, but he's actually making people miss. And last year he was near the bottom of the league in the elusive rating. They talked about for most of the season he hadn't even forced one missed tackle. He's already forced 4 in 2 games on his 33 touches combined between rushes and receptions. And among backs playing 50% of the snap, that's third behind just C.J. Anderson and Ryan Matthews. What have you seen as the biggest difference in Isaiah Crowell?
Well, it's the scheme. You know, when you run he doesn't have the vision to run a zone scheme. And if he can see a hole that's open up in a power game, he's just going for it. And he hits it, and he hits it hard. So that's where he's best at. Duke is good in both schemes because he has the vision. And even in a power scheme where you do have to adjust your pass sometimes, that's where Crow does tend to struggle, is that if, you know, you have a power play that's supposed to open up at left tackle, but something happens where it needs to open up at left guard, he does have to adjust his route, and he tends to struggle that way. But and where Duke, on the other hand, he can do that and does it quickly. But when the offensive line plays well, like it did in the first quarter in the first half, it opens up those holes and he can hit it, and he's gives him the confidence that when he's running well, he can actually, you know, he makes players miss. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not he can continue to show that he's breaking tackles at a better rate than he has, you know, in the first 2 years. Because in the first two years, he had 30 missed tackles on 330 carries, which is a pretty bad rate.
So, yeah.
He is showing a much better rate this year. Duke, on the other hand, I really think they needed to try to utilize Duke more. But
yeah.
We'll see if that happens with Cody Kessler in there, you know, having to do a lot of checkdowns and stuff like that.
Hopefully it will. John, we thank you very much for the time, and we look forward to talking to you every single Tuesday here on CBD.
Yes, hopefully one of these weeks the Browns will get a win, and it'll be a lot more good to talk about.
Yeah, hopefully that would be the case. All right, John Costco, our guest there. When we come back, we'll go around the league. We'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850 here on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Fans, head to browns.whereimfrom.com to enter for your chance to win an autographed Gary Barnage t-shirt and a Where I'm From apparel gift pack. Winner will be selected on Sunday morning before the game. Matt Willems wearing a Where I'm From shirt as we speak. So comfortable. And I love that one, the Cleveland one. Oh, it is a very soft fabric, a lovely fabric. So check that out, Where I'm From. Again, to go for the contest, it's browns.whereimfrom.com. A lot of change on the Browns offensive side, and it's basically the center of that operation. The center and the quarterback, the battery, they'd call it in baseball, both different this week. John Greco taking over at center. He spoke with the media yesterday.
John, you said a few times that playing center has been in the back of your mind. Here it is.
Here it is, yeah. And, I'm ready mentally, this week of practice, get preparation with Cody, get the snap timing and everything down, and we'll get our calls straight. We'll have, meetings all week and everything, and we'll be ready to go.
It's one thing to jump in the middle of a game and in a pinch, and you've done that twice now, but to now have to do it full time, what challenges does that present to you?
The challenge is that, like you said, when you're just thrown in there, you don't really have time to think about it. You just have to do it. But I think it's, to my advantage just because I'll have a week of preparation. It won't be like, hey, just tossed in there. So I'll get the reps mentally and physically. Sometimes, that's the thing. When you're the backup, you have to take all the reps mentally and just kind of you think about what you're doing. And so, like I said, it's in the back of your mind. But now that I'll be able to do it all week, should be put us in the best situation.
I know you haven't snapped the ball to Cody, but have you been in there when he's played yet or in practice even or not? Will this be your first?
I snap to Cody every day during our center quarterback exchange before practice, but now because he's been sprinkled in there with us, and then he's been on the look team, and I haven't taken any snaps with them, so this will be our first week doing that.
John, aside from the obvious snapping the ball, what are the main changes in your responsibilities moving over one spell?
Just a little bit of technique and forward type issues or changes, I should say. Playing next to the center my whole career and playing center, it's I'm dialed in mentally. I know what we have to do, assign the wise and everything, and with the communication, it's just about getting everybody lined up. And instead of communicating with the center and right tackle, I'm communicating with both guards and both tackles. So I'll be ready to do that. And like I said, this week will be great. Get in there, work with Cody, work with the rest of the line to get us kind of ironed up, get us ready to go down to Miami.
What's your scouting report on Alvin Bailey and your confidence in him moving in right next to you, right guard?
Alvin's an awesome player. Play next to him in the spring and early on in camp. He and I had great chemistry. I have no doubt that he's going to be able to come in and do an unbelievable job.
Hey, John, it's the third week and you're going to be on your third starting quarterback. Just like, how do you process that mentally, and how does the team kind of keep moving forward?
It's injuries happen in the NFL. Unfortunately for us, it's been two quarterbacks. But we can't make any excuses. We have to protect better. That's one thing that we have to do. And that's not an excuse. It's just a fact. It's something we have to do better. It's something I have to do better. So that's what we're going to do this week. Try to protect Cody, give him all the opportunities to make throws and find guys that are open. We got to continue to run the ball, and we can't let that fall off. We have to do that more, pick up that intensity because teams are going to start dialing in on that. So I think that's going to be a kind of a sense of urgency for us.
And I know you applauded Josh's toughness yesterday. I mean, maybe figured that he wouldn't be able to play, but when you heard that he was out for this week, I mean, how hard was that for a guy that fought so hard yesterday?
It's tough, and like I said, I'm sure if it was up to him, he'd be playing out there in that sling. But he's got to be smart because you never know. There could be time later in the season where we need him again. But like I said yesterday, credit to him for being so tough.
What have you learned about Cody in the short time he's been here that gives you maybe some kind of idea that he might be ready to fill in?
I'm confident. Just seeing him through the spring and through this, during camp and this early part of the season, he's a smart player. He's in the meetings with us, so I can hear, he's listening to what the veterans are saying, what Robert, what Josh are saying, what Cam and I are saying. So he knows. He's been taking notes this whole time, and he's a smart kid. He can make plays. He's got a good arm. So I'm really confident about it. I'm excited about the opportunity. What a better way to get your first NFL start with a guy that's a brand new center. it'll be a good opportunity for us. I'm excited about it.
When we were in Tampa, you talked a little bit about how you always stay ready to move in there at center. Can you just talk about how you do that, how you split some time snapping and whatnot?
Like I said, every day we work on snaps. That's just routine. Every team does that. And, that's the thing. When you're the starting center, you focus all your attention and your energy on your reps. And when you're the starting guard, you do the same. And when you're the backup at a position, there's times like Alvin didn't get a lot of reps last week at guard, and like he stepped in there and was able to play his butt off for whatever many plays it was. I'm not sure, but that's the thing. When you're a backup or when you're the next guy in at a different position, you have to be ready because they don't care. They're not like, oh, well, no, you can't say I didn't get any reps there. No one cares. It's just you got to get the job done, and everyone has that in their back of their minds.
That's John Greco, the new center for your Cleveland Browns, while Cam Irving is out with the bruised lung, and hopefully, he is week to week. We'll see how it goes, but Greco will start at center, and next to him at guard will be Alvin Bailey. We've got one call here. It's coming up when we return after further review, but we've got Andrew in Cleveland on the phone. Andrew.
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen?
Not good, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Just laying on the beach. So I'll actually be traveling down to Miami to support the Dog Pound this weekend. Do you guys
awesome.
Have any suggestions on must-see or must-do things while I'm down there?
I mean, if you've never been to South Beach, I'd say you got to go to South Beach. You can party at Fountain Blue. There's,
Wet Willy's.
A billion places that you can go party down there.
Yes.
Great food down there. There's tons of stuff to do. But I would make sure if you've never been down there, the Clevelander is an awesome spot. I think that's where Lebatard does his show from, actually, the Clevelander.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would
Mondrian's
check that out.
Mondrian's beautiful.
Yeah, just make sure you get to South Beach. That's
yeah, I'm saying
that
South
would be
Beach.
The number one
that's
recommendation.
What I'm saying.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you very much. I like that call. Solid one right there. Focusing on the important things, like what you're going to do when you get down to Miami. I like it. Strong. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back after further review, bring in our producer, Matt Fontana. We'll also take your phone calls, 216-578-0850 here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Our guy Bob Millersburg chimes in with his top five things he wants to know after NFL week number two. Are you ready, Matt Willem?
Yes.
Number five, what bumbling broadcast team will CBS assign to this week's game? He said, after what I heard last week, I'd rather listen to the Spanish broadcast or Stephen Hawking call the Browns game. Suggested maybe they'll pull Rush Limbaugh or Dennis Miller out of mothballs. Apparently, he was not happy with the quality of the television announcement. Hey, Bob, this is serious. Just turn the TV volume down and sync it up with Jim Donovan's call on the radio because
right.
Jim is as good as it gets.
But there's always a delay.
You got to sync it up. You got to pause your TV and get it synced up.
Okay.
Number four, he said, will the NFL refs up the ante and let three Miami defenders pile on our quarterback without throwing a flag? That play infuriated me. Number three, was it my imagination or the Cleveland defensive play suffered drastically when Nassib left the game? I think the pressure on the quarterback went down when Nassib left the game. I think that is true.
Agree.
Number two, will my prayers ever be answered for better clock management by the Browns? Said they wasted over 20 seconds prior to the two-minute warning against Baltimore, for instance. I don't think Josh McCown was aware that they were at the two-minute warning, which is on a veteran quarterback, but they were getting them lined up, and I think it's a good point there. And number one, did Matt Wilhelm wave goodbye to the TV screen last night when Cutler left the Monday Night Football game injured?
I did not. I watched the first half. A great friend of mine was at the house. We were watching the game. We had some good conversations going on in the midst of a football game that I ultimately didn't care who won, even though I was rooting for the Bears. So, no, I didn't. But I do love seeing on ESPN.com on my phone Stephen A's comments about Jay Cutler being the worst quarterback in the NFL and a selfish quitter.
He certainly didn't look very good last night. I can tell you that. Let me promise you that right now. Okay, let's go to the phones quickly. Phil in Brecksville. Phil.
Man, I was cracking up watching Jay Cutler, thinking about your favorite guy. So that'll stay with me as long as that guy stays here. Couple things. You know, let's give Kessler a chance. I mean, this guy didn't play in the MAC, for crying out loud. He played in a great situation, and you know what? He had some adversity. You know, in his junior year to his senior year, that program could have went anywhere, and he stuck with it and stayed there. So, you know, I'm interested to see, you know, what he can do, number one. Number two, what is going on with the special teams? I mean, Tabor was the only one that was retained. But, you know, having Hayden and Tremont Williams when he has Duke Johnson and Corey Coleman, and also without Batamosi and Marlon Moore, I didn't think that the special teams would be as bad as they are. So either Tabor's, you know, scared about his job or someone's telling him what to do, because I can't remember him ever being so complacent, you know, to put Tremont Williams and Joe Hayden back there when he has Duke Johnson and Corey Coleman. Do you guys have any insight on that?
Well, the one thing that I can say, and Nathan and I went back and watched it again yesterday, I went back and watched it again today, is the two blocks on the extra point and on the field goal, or the tip on the field goal, have nothing to do with the protection. That I will say.
Yep.
Okay? A kicker in the National Football League from those distances have to get lift on the football. Flat out. So the two blocks, the 2 points, actually those 5 points fall on Patrick Murray's shoulders and no one else's.
Yep.
The operations were perfect. Guys get knocked on their butt every single play. You know, I mean, they're attacking gaps. They're using different fronts. You'd be surprised the amount of time that you spend in approaching PAT and field goal now that they've moved it back to where you kick it from. So that's from a special team standpoint. And then the other thing is we have to understand, and I'm not making up for anybody, but the nucleus of this football team is young. The core of those special teamers, let's average the age of the 10 guys running down on kickoff.
Okay.
And I promise you it's no older than 24 years old.
My question to you is, though, isn't that the case for most teams in the National Football League?
Not necessarily. I average the age of the individuals running down on the Baltimore Ravens kickoff team, and I bet you it's at least 2 to 3 years older.
All right, so for the Browns, here are the guys that have been, like, the core special teamers in terms of running down, and as you say, and getting after. You got Tank Carter.
Okay, probably 27, we'll say. Sure.
Okay, Corey Lemonnier.
What's he, second year in the league?
No, more than that.
Okay.
Jordan Poyer, Don Jones, not that young. Christian Kirksey.
Okay.
Ibrahim Campbell.
Okay.
Second year. Agba.
First year.
Schobert.
First year.
Ricardo Lewis.
First year.
Kindred.
First year.
Holmes. First year.
Yep.
Dominique Alexander, first year. Tracy Howard, first year.
So I'd say, yeah, we probably average 25 years old.
Okay.
Because you got to figure 22 or 23 year olds amongst all those first year players, and then Don Jones, Kirksey, who's probably only 25, Tank Carter might be the oldest of them all. Don Jones
and Tank Carter.
And yeah. Tank Carter, probably 27 years old. So probably 24 years old.
Yeah.
And I'd be surprised, just looking at some of the core special teamers that Tank Carter alluded to last week prior to the Ravens football game, that the core of those guys they've seen now multiple years in a row, 3 years in a row, all playing together. And even furthermore, has Emmanuel Ogba ever run down on a kickoff at any point in his career at Oklahoma State? Maybe as a freshman, maybe as a sophomore.
Yeah.
Has Joe Schobert, once he became, you know, the stud at Wisconsin, ever run down on kickoff? Probably not since he was a freshman or sophomore as Wisconsin, earning that scholarship, you know, at Wisconsin. Has Christian Kirksey? You know, yeah, he's been a core special teamer, so
yes.
I would say yes. But Kindred. You know, these are guys that are starting. Dominique Alexander, as I talk about him, starting 36 of 39 football games at a school like Oklahoma, not covering a lot of kickoffs, I'm sure.
No.
So this is still a lot of learning, a lot of new, and you'd be surprised only because I was that guy. Matt Wilhelm didn't cover a lot of kickoffs since 1999 as a freshman at Ohio State. After that, it was like I was a defensive guy, I was a starter. It was I'm running out on defense after you go tackle the guy inside the 20. I'm
right.
Not helping you tackle the guy inside the 20, right? So you forget, and the amount of the same way that you can draw up a scheme to pop a run like Isaiah Crowell's 85-yard touchdown, that same type of emphasis goes into Chris Tabor and John Harbaugh constructing a punt return or kickoff return the same way that I do it on Friday nights.
Yes, and you have a massive advantage.
Right. That's what I mean. You're constructing it to try to make one pop.
Yep.
You know, and then you use the tendencies of a young football player. Hey, we're going to sucker block this guy because he ain't never seen a sucker block in his life before, and it's going to blow that hole wide open, and you get a Devin Hester 48-yard punt return, or you get this guy out of his lane, seeing one thing, chasing another. All those little things you can do, it's just experience. The same thing we're talking about Cody Kessler as a quarterback, seeing and making the throws and doing it over and over and over again. Same goes for a kickoff. You know, so it's just a matter of these guys need to get experience and they need to grow up quickly because it can lose us football games.
It certainly can. All right, when we come back after further review, final thoughts here on this Tuesday in Berea, Zagur and Wilhelm.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Wrapping it up here. No official word yet from the Browns on the signing of Charlie Whitehurst. Also, it's been reported they've signed a center off of the practice squad from Washington. Those moves probably released later today. Keep it tuned to ClevelandBrowns.com, the Browns mobile app, for the very latest on that. By the way, if you have a serious work-related injury, call 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Elk and Elk, proud sponsor of the Cleveland Browns. Go Browns. Bring in our producer, Matt Fontana, and quickly wrap it up by going around the league.
After further review.
Or after further review.
We're going to do after further review, but around the league style.
Boom. Yes.
That's how it is. We're going to combine it all.
Double dipping.
Number one, guys, is it Pittsburgh and then everyone else in the AFC North?
Absolutely. We just saw them beat the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm not impressed by that Ravens team, and the Browns very much a work in progress. So, yes, the Pittsburgh Steelers are the clear favorite to win the AFC North, and they've done it so far even without Le'Veon Bell.
Without Le'Veon Bell, and I think Antonio Brown had, what, 3 receptions for like 30 yards this week.
Yes,
so
I know his fantasy owners were very pissed with this.
They were. So I agree that they are the cream of the crop right now. And the key to that is their defense continuing to fight and get better, which I think it will over time, and keeping Ben Roethlisberger healthy.
After further review.
Guys, can the Vikings survive without Adrian Peterson for the time being?
Well, if Sam Bradford continues to play the way he does and they rely on his arm, I think you can buy time. I don't necessarily know what their upcoming schedule looks like, but if they can split, you know, I think that the meniscus tear is probably going to be a 4 to 6 week injury. If they can split and then have Adrian Peterson come back and play the way, you know, we know he can play and be healthy, I think you've got an advantage already in that division by having beaten the Green Bay Packers.
Well, allow me to answer your question with a question, Matt Fontana. How many yards does Adrian Peterson have rushing so far this season?
I'm going to guess less than 100 a game.
I'm going to say, no, less than 100 a game. He has less than 80 for the season.
He has 31 carries for 50 yards. That's 1.6 yards a carry and 0 touchdowns. They are 2-0. So the answer to your question is yes.
Without Teddy Bridgewater, too.
Clearly, they can survive without him. Because he hasn't been there yet.
See, now this question I should really hit.
We ask the questions.
Fact or fiction, because this is a fact or fiction question. Rex Ryan will make it to the end of the season with the Buffalo Bills.
I'm going to say fiction. I don't necessarily know. I'd have to look at their staff on who could potentially take over. I'm going to go out on a limb and say both Rex and Rob Ryan will be fired before the end of the season is over. Because you can't have one and not the other.
So I think he's definitely getting fired, and from talking to people there, he has totally lost the team, and people are very concerned about what's going on there with him. So I think that he will be out of there soon. I don't think the team is happy with him at all.
After further review.
Final one, guys. How long is the leash on Kirk Cousins in Washington?
I think it's very long. I think that they're
paying
him all that money.
$19 million. In length, whatever that translates to. They're committed to him via a 1-year deal with that significant franchise tag. And I think, but it's solidifying Washington's stance on a guy like Kirk Cousins on why they didn't give him $110 million.
I think it's the whole year's a referendum on him. They need to figure out if he's the guy that they want to go with, and if it is not, then they need to get that answer very, very soon. So I'm expecting that to be the case for them. I think he'll have a long leash, and they'll see what they have in him. For the Browns, another new quarterback. We'll get a look at him tomorrow. We'll start to get into the matchups. We'll let you know who you're going to see on this Miami Dolphins team, the Wednesday Hump Day matchup report. And we continue to roll on here, getting ready for Game 3 of the season. The players will be back. We'll get to hear from them. Cody Kessler, Hugh Jackson as well. That's all coming up tomorrow here on CBD. I want to thank John Costco for being with us, Sir Andrew Gribble for being with us. For our producer, Matt Fontana, and Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.